a price to pay. On reading this, one senses a similarity to Frantz Fanon, the African psychiatrist whose revolutionary writings were so influential in shaping the revolutionary political left of the 1950s and 1960s. In the first chapter of Black Skin, White Masks, titled The Negro and Language, Fanon wrote, "The black man has two dimensions, one with his fellows, the other with the white man. A Negro behaves differently with a white man and with another Negro. So, too, Obama advises Ray to talk one way with him and another way when whites are present." The connection with Fanon may seem slim until we get to Chapter 5, The Fact of Blackness, where Fanon claims, "For several years, certain laboratories have been trying to produce a serum for denigrification. With all the earnestness in the world, laboratories have sterilized their test tubes, checked their scales, and embarked on researches that might make it possible for the miserable Negro to whiten himself and thus to throw off the burden of that corporeal malediction." Recall the story Obama told about an African American tragically harming himself by taking chemicals to alter his skin. If the source was not Life magazine or Ebony, perhaps Obama got the idea from Fanon's speculation that a serum was being produced for denigrification. In his autobiography, Obama tells us he read Fanon at Occidental College. Fanon's political philosophy should have resonated with Obama, especially since Fanon's writings defined much of the anti-colonial movement that swept across Europe and Africa in the 1950s and 1960s. During the Algerian Revolution in 1954, Fanon went to Algeria and joined the Front de Libération Nationale, the radical socialist party then fighting for independence from France. The revolution in Algeria set the stage for Jomo Kenyatta and Tom Mboya's anti-colonial revolution against the British in Kenya. Much of the expression of black resentment Obama offers in Dreams from My Father appears strongly influenced by Fanon, who wrote, "My blackness was there, dark and unarguable, and it tormented me, pursued me, disturbed me, angered me." But what Obama expresses in Dreams from My Father is not the inner-city black rage of decades of racial discrimination since slavery, as expressed by Stokely Carmichael or Eldridge Cleaver. Obama's black rage, by sharp contrast, is anti-colonial in nature. Obama objected that white folks wrote the rules, and the black folks, seeking to adapt, had no choice but to put the white mask over their black faces, even if doing so violated their feelings of authenticity to self-determine the rules for themselves. Obama railed against the same form of racial oppression his father must have felt under British colonialism. But while attending the elite Punahou school in the Multicultural Society of Hawaii, Obama never experienced educational inequality or seems to have encountered any of the racial discrimination that inner-city African Americans experience. Obama lived in an apartment with his grandparents, but he did not live in an impoverished inner-city ghetto. Obama's crisis is a crisis of racial identity, and he wrote of this struggle to find that identity. In fact, you couldn't even be sure that everything you had assumed to be an expression of your black, unfettered self, the humor, the song, the behind-the-back pass, had been freely chosen by you. At best, these things were a refuge, at worst, a trap. Or as Fanon wrote, "Every colonized people, in other words, every people in whose soul an inferiority complex has been created by the death and burial of its local cultural originality, finds itself face to face with the language of the civilizing nation, that is, with the culture of the mother country's cultural standards. This is the crux of the problem, both for Obama and for Fanon. The colonized is elevated above his jungle status in proportion to his adoption of the mother country's cultural standards. We can see Fanon reflected in Obama when Obama tells us he felt a warning whenever a white girl mentioned in the middle of a conversation how much he likes Stevie Wonder, or when the school principal told me I was cool. I did like Stevie Wonder. I did love basketball, and I tried my best to be cool at all times. So why did such comments set me on edge? These comments set Obama on edge for the same reason colonialism set Fanon on edge. Fanon did not want to put the white colonial mask in front of his black face any more than Obama wanted to internalize white stereotypical ideas of who blacks were in the 1970s. In the final analysis, both Obama and Fanon share the same worst fear, namely, losing their self-determined identities in the definitions and language that a dominant white culture sought to impose on them in order to hold them in subjugation. In writing about his time at Punahou, Obama singled out a friendship with a poet he only identifies as Frank. In introducing Frank, Obama says he lived in a dilapidated house in a run-down section of Waikiki. Obama then provides enough background information about Frank to make identifying him easy for experts. The only poet who fits Obama's description completely is Frank Marshall.